Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why My Lowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only, 5/8 through 5/14. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Welcome to Flights of Fantasy, your romantasy podcast book club. I'm Anna, joined by my book besties, Kim and Christina. And together, we're diving into the characters, theories, lore, and magic behind all your favorite fantasy romance books.
Welcome, book besties. We have a very special episode for you tonight. We had the absolute privilege of sitting down with Elizabeth Evans, the voice of all of Throne of Glass and all of Crescent City, and the voice of the new recordings of ACOTAR coming on May 30th. This was such a beautiful, wonderful conversation. We had so much fun chatting with her. We are so excited to bring you this conversation with Elizabeth.
Yes, we are so thrilled to have her here. And consider this your spoiler warning for everything in the Massverse, Throne of Glass, Crescent City, ACOTAR. We will be discussing it all. So if you have not listened to Elizabeth on any of these books, or if you have not read them, then cheers and happy reading. Come back when you've read, and we will see you next time. But until then, let's go.
Let's go. Welcome, Elizabeth. Thank you so, so, so much for being here. We're so excited to talk to you.
Thank you for having me. This is so nice. Yay. I'm going to say off the bat that I came from something and I did not method dress, just so it's out there. I wasn't like, ooh, podcast, you know.
It's for listeners, if you can't see her, she's in like this high neck lace. It's very Nesta, I think.
It literally looks like I have method dressed. Yeah. So I'm so sorry.
We respect it.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, you know, as other theater kids, we're really into it. Okay.
So. Yeah, it's your rehearsal dress.
Yeah. Okay, so we'd love to start off by discussing kind of your journey as a narrator. So we heard that audiobook narrating kind of found you rather than the other way around, and that's just so beautiful and inspiring. And can you just tell us a little bit about how that all came to be and just what the early days of becoming audiobook narrator looked like for you, that whole process?
Yeah, so I was in undergrad at NYU, and Audible came and did this kind of like career day style workshop. So I just showed up to it out of curiosity, and never really, becoming a narrator was never something I really pursued or like tried to, it wasn't the, you know, the big dream kind of thing, but they let everybody read about 2 minutes from a book. And then the week after, they brought me into audition, and the first two things I did were these very short, kind of like middle grade vet volunteer books. And then literally the third book they gave me was the first Throne of Glass book. And it was a couple years after it had been published in print, but it totally skewed my, I was like, oh, all narrating books are amazing.
It spoiled you.
It really skewed my perception of the work. Yeah, but it was literally the third book I'd ever gotten.
Incredible.
And it's just crazy.
That's so cool.
And then I did that one and then Crown of Midnight immediately after. So I did the first and second books in one go.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So they heard you speaking, and then was Sarah like, I want her voice?
I have no idea, actually. It was so long ago now. I don't remember auditioning for it, but I bet I did. And most authors, I think, I could be wrong, but a lot of them have like narrator approval in their contract where they'll hear like the studio or publishing house will send them like 3-4 people and then they pick. So I actually have no idea.
Yeah.
But I know that it was so early in the game that they put me in direct contact with her. So I've just now, you know, we've always done that since that first Throne of Glass book where I think if you got hired to do her stuff now, there'd be more kind of rungs of people of in between, you know?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
But yeah.
Oh, that was like the perfect time and a place. You both kind of found each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah.
Okay, so can you walk us through a day in the life of recording? Like when you get up, like what's your process before you get to the recording booth?
A day in the life kind of starts the night before because I will have read the book already months out. But I'll reread the like 70 to 100 pages that we may cover the next day, the night before. So it's much more fresh. So I do that the night before. And then next morning I wake up, I'll do a vocal steam. I have like a little steamer. I have terrible allergies. So I do that. And while I'm doing that, I'll look through my very intense, long notes and sort of structure the day. So I'll go like, oh, okay, we have an action sequence that's going to cover these three chapters. So I don't want to stop in the middle of that. Or I'd love to hit this page by lunch because then there's a change of space for the afternoon. Or I want to hit this point by the end of the day so I'm not like having to pick up right in the middle of a big scene tomorrow morning. So I'll kind of set up the day like that in terms of goals.
Yeah.
And then I'll warm up physically. Nothing crazy, but just like you're sitting all day. So stretching, that kind of stuff. And then I'll do a bit of a vocal warm up and then I'll commute to the studio. And then we start reading and stop like half an hour for lunch. And that's kind of it. And then at the end of the day, what I did on these books, which was nice, the studio I was at is like a 30 to 45 minute walk from my apartment. So I would finish recording, do a quick cool down with like a straw, just some slides up and down.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
What is that?
Oh, all I know is that it reduces swelling in your vocal cords, but the like kind of thing.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So I'll do that at the very end of the day. And then I would walk home for like 30, 45 minutes because it's just, I've been sitting all day and then I don't talk for that amount of time. And then I mean, these were such a marathon where it was like, I would go home, like try to chill for a minute and then I would reread for the next day.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it was that for 4 months. And I got married in the middle of it. And then we had like Thanksgiving and Christmas in the middle of it. So,
oh my gosh.
Oh, so in the middle of recording ACOTAR.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
I did the first book and then I got married. And it was really fun to do Mist and Fury right after and start with all the wedding stuff.
Yeah.
Well, she had to, I hope your wedding was a little better.
It was. It was too good. I had to pay for it in that book. But yeah.
Vocally, I'm sure. Yeah.
No, for real. I ended up, I like screamed so much at my wedding, which was so stupid, but it was my wedding. So
I was going to say, wedding. It's your wedding. You have to. Yeah. Sarah would approve, I'm sure.
Oh, she did. I told her. She was like, good, great.
Good.
But then, but yeah, I had a little bit of vocal damage after that. So I ended up kind of having to work through that.
Yeah.
But it was all good. It all worked out. We took a little extra time, a couple days, but everything worked out well.
Oh, yeah. Wow, that's so cool. And so in the booth, are you like, is the goal to do it in one take? Are you like stopping, starting when you...
No, it is one take.
Wow.
Yeah. So we only stop if I make a mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, I sort of wish that I could do like a PSA that would just be out there a little more, that it's one take. It's not like a movie or anything like that.
Yeah.
And because I'm on a punch record, what that means is anytime I make a mistake, the engineer stops the recording. I hear myself at the last place that I breathed and then I come right back in. So they're kind of editing in real time. It saves them a lot of work on the other end.
Oh, wow.
But it's one take. It's not like, you know, rehearsing it to find a final product. It's,
yeah,
you're reading the book for like 8 hours.
You're Gene Kelly. You're doing one long take.
Yeah.
That's really, I mean, that's so impressive.
Yeah. I will say celebrities, I don't know if this is true like 100% of the time, but a lot of them, they're on a straight record where they press record at the top of the day and then they can do a sentence like 5 times to perfect it. And the real like narrators that are doing this day in, day out are on a punch record where it's one take. It's you start and then at the end of the day, you've done however many pages.
Wow. I didn't know that.
It's like a marathon.
Yeah.
Do you ever pause yourself and go, Like, even if you don't mess up a word, you don't do a retake. You keep going.
It depends. Like, if it's a really big moment, if it's something that I know is like a defining moment of the book, if it feels like that, I will. But it's something I struggle with at the end of the day, or, you know, when a record is done, where I'm like, oh, I worked so hard. I think I did the best I could, but you kind of go, I don't know how it comes out. And you, until you hear it, you really don't know. But for these books, there's some, like, I know some of the kind of big lines. And so those I would be a little more like, I really want to make sure that came out well. But there is this sort of thing where when you're kind of in the flow and in the pocket, I think things come out well. And then if I start getting too in my head about trying to perfect it, it gets worse. I get more
in your head, and then, yeah, totally.
Yeah, right. Like, if I'm listening to myself way too much, then I'm not in the book.
That makes sense. Yeah.
There'd be a couple things, but usually we just go right through.
So cool.
Yeah. I always felt like the best shows were ones where I walked away and I went, like, I remembered it, but I also was like, I don't remember. Like, I think I left it all out there.
Like, what happened?
And I imagine with recording, like, if you're doing an entire, like you said, an action sequence where it's, you know, three chapters or something, you want to get that out. I can see why, because it's, like you said, it's the flow of the characters and the arc.
Yeah. And I think with action stuff, it's specifically the rhythm that you, I mean, Sarah, she writes such incredible cliffhangers too, that it's almost like, you want that cliffhanger, and then you want to keep the momentum going when the next chapter starts until there's kind of a natural finishing of a section. And then there's a lull where you sort of sit and take it in. But yeah, I mean, it's a crazy job. I mean, I'll say, like, I do a lot of prep, and so I know what's coming. And I know in my own notes to myself, every chapter, I give myself a little phrase or sentence that's like, Feyre fights the worm, this happens, just so I know exactly where, like, what's sitting in each chapter, and I can kind of look at that on a break or at lunch. So I have a good amount of knowing exactly what's coming. But
got it.
Well, and that really, you know, comes through, because your work is so much of a comfort listen for us and for so many people, because I feel like it's this story we love, but also it's this gradual up and down flow, you know, that just, like, really, it's beautiful.
So yeah. It translates.
Yeah.
Oh, good. I'm glad. I remember when we were in Silver Flames, I wanted to get through the whole hike before lunch, that we kind of, like, a day sort of started, I forget exactly where, but
that's a heavy.
Yeah, because it's so heavy, and there's so much in there that feels insanely personal to me about, like, my dad passed, and we had a strangely similar relationship, even though it's a fantasy book, so, like, I'll calm down. But there's a lot that I was like, I know this is going to make me cry a lot, and I don't want to have to do a chapter and then eat a sandwich and then, like, go back into it. So that's one of those where it's like, I know I need to get to the specific moment before we can sort of take a real break. So it's all in that kind of flow.
That's beautiful. Yeah, I can't wait to hear that. Ooh. Okay, so pivoting a little bit, so for a new release of Sarah's, how early do you get the book before it's published, and then are you sworn to secrecy? Can you just, like, not see anyone or speak about anything? Like, I wouldn't even be able to look at Anna and Kim. I would just be like
I mean, I get them I get them months out. It sort of depends. I get them early,
yeah,
pretty early, because it takes me time to read. And then the recording process, like, I get them before, like, 2, maybe 3 months before that. And then that takes time. And then post needs a certain amount of months. So I get them a good chunk ahead. And they come with, like, all sorts of password protection, all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, then it's just, like, secret keeping. And I just keeping secrets.
Yeah, exactly.
That's wild.
Yeah. But it makes me feel really, it's felt like it just has been a bigger and bigger privilege as the books keep growing,
right,
like, be trusted with that information. And
totally.
But yeah, it's really fun. And then I fangirl so much over it too. So it's fun to get them early. And then I remember before House of Sky and Breath, where at the end, the crossover, that just, like, waiting for everybody else to get to the end of that book once it was released. And, like, that was so fun. It was so fun for me to, like, see all of that. Yes. And how everyone reacted.
And you're like, you guys have no idea what's coming. You're going to just, Love it so much.
Oh my gosh. That moment at the end of that book was Kim, who's our other co-host, who's not on with us tonight, but she had us, Chrissy and I, record ourselves.
Yes, she got spoiled, and unfortunately, and so she had us record ourselves reading that last chapter. And so we have that on Patreon of us just losing it. I'm like very pregnant and just crying. Like, Anna figured it out within three words, and I was like, she has paint on her hands, like screaming. It was just.
Oh my God.
Oh man.
Okay, so moving on. Obviously, you've covered many characters. What systems do you have in place to keep track of all the various vocal choices, especially when you've voiced characters over many, many years, like Throne of Glass? How do you keep track of that?
Yeah. I mean, the nice thing about, I mean, it was such a marathon to do them all as quickly as we had to do them. But what was nice about ACOTAR is that it was so fresh just to go from book to book to book and to have a little bit of a relationship with those characters ahead of time. But for Throne of Glass, or I do this for every book, but I'll read it and I'll make like a crazy document of every time a character speaks, what page they come in, every word that's used to describe their voice. And then if like something significant changes, and then all the words I need to double check with Sarah. And then like a sort of, this is what happens in this chapter. This is the location of the chapter. So I've got this like pretty detailed document for each book. And then with Throne of Glass, what I would do is make little vocal samples just on like, you know, on my phone or that sort of thing. And especially because I would send them to Sarah for approval. So I would just, whatever she would approve, I would just put in a folder that would be like, you know, here's Manon era fire. And then like Manon a couple books later, if there's a big arc that affects their voice.
Wow.
But so I would keep all those little voice memos. And then yeah, I just have like a hard drive with all this information on it. And then for ACOTAR, because we were doing them back to back, the studio would do little character markers. So when we would get a couple books in, I could be like, can you play Alice? I feel like I should make sure I'm not losing her. Okay, great. And then, so we could do that because they were back to back. But Throne of Glass, all of that work was keeping it in my head. And, you know, just the prep of playing the night before, the morning of, like, here's my sample for this character, to keep it fresh, and then going in and trying to make them match over years. And then we did a re-record of the first couple books during the pandemic.
Oh.
So then I had to like reverse engineer and try to redo everything so it would match the later books. So that was also very fun.
Oh my gosh.
For Throne of Glass. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Which just had to do with the audio rights. And then for ACOTAR, because I'd already done Flame and Shadow, it was really fun to go, I want to land Nesta in this vocal place at the end of Silver Flames. And then she begins in ACOTAR in such like a haughtier place. And then she goes into the cauldron and is totally broken. And her voice is described in like Frost and Starlight, and then in Silver Flames as being like almost a like guttural and viperish and like an animalistic rage, those kind of words. So just kind of charting that arc was really fun. And then when we were doing Silver Flames, we were getting close to the end, I would listen a little bit. It's hard for me to listen to myself, but I would listen to little pockets of Flame and Shadow just to be like, all right, we're getting close to the end of the book. So I want to gear her into this kind of, like, now she's a warrior, but she's found a little more inner peace. She's gotten to this place. So I want to land her there.
Yeah.
So that was very fun to try to make. Hopefully that's how it comes out. But that was the intention.
Oh, you're making me so excited to go listen.
Yeah, I can't wait.
I'm so excited to hear Nesta's voice.
Yeah. Okay. We just wanted to geek out and be theater kids for just a second. So you have an acting background, which just shines through in the most beautiful way. And we are also from an acting background. We met at theater school, actually, at University of Oklahoma.
Oh, very cool. I'm from Texas originally, so like neighbors.
Oh, we're both from Texas.
We all are from Texas.
What part?
Houston.
I'm from Fort Worth.
I'm from Plano, so very close to you.
Very close. That's so funny. Yeah, we went to OU.
And then I transferred to the city, and I went to ADA.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Very cool. Very cool.
But yeah.
Sorry to derail your question.
No.
You're totally fine. But yeah, no. So we just, you know, in listening to you and your vocal performances, you're just so grounded and layered in the performances, and you bring such an emotional nuance to every character in every scene. And so Are there certain parts of your acting training that you mm-hmm. bring into the process when you step into the booth, like, you know, physicality wise or getting into character? Like, is that something you pull from?
Yes and no. I mean, I do. I think of them as very different skill sets. But I think that maybe the crossover with acting is that, I mean, it's kind of like you're playing tennis with yourself, that you're playing all sides of the scene mm-hmm. or both sides of the mm-hmm. scene when it's two characters specifically. So the feeling of like if you were doing a play by yourself and you were having to balance that, that feels like it crosses over. But there is a lot that feels like it's just so different. And it's nice for me to be in the booth where it's like it doesn't matter what I look like. It's not about like the sort of what you would do on a stage or in a movie. So I can sort of convince myself that I am like a, I don't know, 80-year-old wizard with a beard. That's not in her books, but you get the idea.
No, exactly. Yeah. That makes sense.
So I think probably the imaginative aspects of it come in. But other than that, I think it really is a different skill set because of how much you're balancing, where the nice thing about when you're acting is you're just in that character.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Or you really embody one thing, where it's sort of like you kind of have to be the puppet master, I think, when you're doing a book. And I think there are times, I've talked about this with some other narrators, it's tough for me because I cry a lot, but there are times when if something sounds almost too realistic, it can kind of take you out of the book. Like at the end of the day, it should still all feel
fascinating,
like you're inside an imaginary world.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a little bit of like, or if I say something too awkward the way that you would say it in real life, it sounds very strange to the ear.
It kind of takes you out. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think there's some of that. But yeah,
I mean, piggybacking kind of off of that a little bit, how do you balance infusing those like heightened emotions in those really dramatic scenes? But like you said, you also have to maintain a tone that's like easy for listeners to digest. So like that must be hard occasionally. How do you balance that?
That's a great way to think about it with relating to acting, because it's like, that is why it feels like such a different skill set, that you have the narration that's kind of constantly moving everything forward. So if that's too dynamic and too melodic at times, if there's a heightened scene, it may confuse the listener to think that the narration is dialogue spoken out loud, where my like personal taste and flavor is just that the narration is still expressive, but it, when there's a scene, it sort of is dialed back a little bit so that the dialogue can pop out.
Gotcha.
Where if I was really going to narrate like that, and it was sort of that bounciness all the way through it, I think one, it would be hard to listen to for so many hours. Though the flip side is like, I don't know, sometimes people are like, she puts me to sleep. So, but
you don't want to be yelled at either while you're listening to something.
Right, right.
You know?
And there is this kind of constant balance of, even if a character is yelling, you have to come right back in with, she yelled, like in the narration. So it's sort of, it's a constant sort of give and take there.
Yeah.
The nice thing with all of Sarah's books, though, is I do feel like the entire guide is on the page, where those heightened emotions, there's always a really beautiful rhythm where they sort of build to a climax and then they sit for a moment in a really nice way. So I feel like she's done a lot of the work that way for me. And it's just about following the map that she's laid out.
Yeah.
And then just trying to dial things up and down and hoping that, especially with first person, there's a big difference between a character saying I and me when it's their internal thought versus the external, a line of dialogue of I'm going to do this or I want this, but you need that distance.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
If you're running a retail business, don't let disorganized order fulfillment cause chaos. Use ShipStation instead. From running a business out of your garage to multiple warehouses, ShipStation is ideal for every phase of your growth. Save time with one login for all your stores and by automating tasks. Plus, you'll get the best shipping rates from global carriers. Calm the chaos with the shipping software that delivers. Start a free trial at ShipStation.com/audio. That's ShipStation.com/audio.
Was there ever a time specifically that you were recording where you found the emotion getting the best of you?
Yeah, I mean, so in Throne of Glass, when the 13 sacrificed themselves, that was one of the only times where I've had to like step out of the booth. We had to stop so many times because they meant so much to me and I'm already just like an emotional basket case. But it was so, I was crying so much that it just distorts the audio too much to keep. So that's kind of a good example of what I was trying to say earlier, where it's like, it's very real, but it's so real that like you can't understand. Like, what, you know, yeah, it's like too hard. So yeah, sometimes it's about, I don't know, trying to find that place to dial it back.
Yeah.
But have it still be very real. All of the Nesta stuff in Silver Flames, I feel like we left in more of the crying than we normally would.
Wow.
And that's only because the books have been out. And I, you know, the nice thing about doing Throne of Glass is that I didn't have anything else in my head in terms of the fandom. And then with Silver Flames, it was sort of like, this is all very real for me reading it. And I don't think it distorts. We listened back to a couple spots on that day to just be like, are we okay? Or do I need to redo it?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we left almost all of it in, where it'll be a little distorted, but in a way that now we can see people respond to that, that kind of expression of that emotion. Because I think it's driven by what's really happening in the book, my connection to the characters in the book, and not a sense of ego on top of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, it's not acting for the sake of acting and like showing off acting. It feels very honest in,
yes,
yeah,
totally,
on my side of it.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. There was a couple lines that I had a hard time getting out because they're just so great. And then I remember in Mist and Fury going into the wedding, sometimes I would get emotional to the point where I'm like, ooh, I think this is me. And I don't know that Pharaoh should be this far. So we would, like, there's a couple lines in there where she's like, I'm not good and I'll never get better. Some of that was just like, I would feel like in the moment.
Yeah.
And it would be unhelpful for the story. So we dial those things down a little.
Yeah, there's so much self-loathing in the beginning.
Yeah, but I love the arc of that book. It's so great.
Oh, it really is.
Yeah.
So speaking of first person and the difference there from all of Throne of Glass and Crescent City being third person and then jumping in to ACOTAR being first person. I mean, I guess most of it being first person. Yeah. And again, you touched on this a little bit, but that difference of prep of like, okay, now I have all these different inner monologue, I have external monologue, I have mind speak. How, you know, do you differentiate those?
The mind speak was really tough with first person.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sort of just feels like dialing something up and down and going like, okay, I hope it's coming across just like a step above, but then not feeling out loud. But yeah, I think third person for me is definitely my comfy space because, I've narrator friends that feel differently, but what I like a lot about third person is when that's not at play, it feels like Elizabeth, I'm telling the story and then I pop into the characters. And I really love that feeling. First person is also great too, because you're just sort of bathing in the, you know, the luxury of it and the world of it. But it feels like it's much more difficult, I think, to just make sure, like, is this coming out clear? And it's sort of like the beginning of the first ACOTAR book is a great example of, I see that scene as so filmic and with such kind of like, it's very intimate in the sense that it's snowing in the woods and she's like, you know, all of that stuff.
Yes.
And then there's the hope of like, oh, I hope I'm not so intimate that it just sounds flat or sleepy. So that relationship, I think, is a lot harder in first person, where I'm pretty comfy now being like, she walked to the door and she did this, and the kind of third person way of very naturally flowing into a story. So yeah, they're very different. I will say, I mean, we'll see how people react. I had such a blast doing them. And then it was just kind of, when we got into Frost and Starlight, into some of those chapters, and then into Silver Flames, it felt to me like coming home, because
all the
other series were in that third person. So it was a nice sort of shift.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, they're both great. They're both hard. It's all hard.
It's all hard.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, you do a beautiful job.
Oh, thanks.
So, okay, are you familiar with the term book hangover?
No.
Okay, so let me enlighten you. Book hangover is what we call, like, over on Bookstagram and Book Talk. Like, when you finish mm-hmm. a series, Throne of Glass, Crescent City, ACOTAR, Onyx Storm, any of these, like, big series. And all of a sudden, you have this, like, book hangover. You don't know what to do with yourself. You're, like, in this emotional void.
Yeah.
And you don't, you're trying to come out of it. And I was curious if when you finish recording a series, or even maybe it's, like, there's a specific book that you finish, and do you ever feel that, like, the sense of, like, oh, wow.
No, I feel like I have an actual hangover.
It is work, so it might feel that way more.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think the tough thing about it, like, the absolute best feeling of doing these books is when you're in the booth and you get lost in the story. So I'm like, the self-consciousness is gone because I'm just thinking about how much I love telling the story and being in it and all of that stuff. That's also the place where I can control what's happening to a certain extent. So for me, with it being work-related, at the end of the book, it feels like it's almost harder because now I go, I can't change anything. It's done. Like, that's how it came out. And if day 8 of the book, I didn't get a lot of sleep and I'm like, oh, I hope the beginning wasn't too slow, or I hope, you know, all of those things are, it's in the can. It's past now.
Yeah.
And then it lives forever. So... So that's, I feel like I have that at the end of the book where it's like, oh, I hope that came out great. And also, like, I don't hear it. I don't know. I just have the feeling of what it was. And sometimes the feeling of what it can be in the booth, you hear later and you're like, that's what it sounded like. So I feel like that's more my relationship where I'm tired. I hope I did a good job. I have to wait a really long time to sort of, I'll go through and spot check just to, it's, I can't listen to the full thing. It's too weird, but I'll just be like, how did that scene come out? Or how did, like, Reese's intro come out? Like, how are those first lines? So I'll do that. But that process is so many months away from when I initially, like, on the day was there.
Yeah. Finish.
Yeah. So I think that's more of my relationship. And then, but like a fan, I get very much like, I want to know what's next, you know, all that stuff. So I feel those things as well.
So cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So the nature of being a fantasy book podcaster, it's hard sometimes for us to take our podcasting hat off when we read specifically fantasy books. We're in our fifth season, so, like, I write majority of our outlines, so I'll speak for myself. But when I'm reading a fantasy book, like, I'm constantly looking for the tropes, the themes we're going to explore, the Easter eggs. I can't take that podcast hat off. So I'm curious if when you're reading for enjoyment, not for, you know, recording, do you have a hard time turning off that narrator voice to, like, are you always coming up with a character voice, or is it easy for you to turn off?
No, it's 100% off.
Wow.
There's no, because it's like, because I am just reading for enjoyment, there's almost a sense of relief of, like, I don't have to do that. I don't have to think about, how am I going to balance these 8 characters in a scene if I'm not going to put any accents on anyone? Yeah. I don't have to do that. So it's just
for fun.
It's just relief.
Yeah. I love that for you.
Yeah.
I love
it's
that.
It's nice where I'll read something and I'll be like, man, I don't have to figure this out. You know,
man, that's nice. Great that I just get to read this. That's great.
Yeah.
I love that. Okay. That's good. I'm very glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Okay. Little follow up though. So when you, cause you read ACOTAR, I'm assuming before you knew you were ever going to record these.
Back during Crescent City, I read the first 2 and Silver Flame. Yeah.
Oh, but I guess my follow up was, you knew what characters you would be reading for House of Sky and Breath, House of Flame and Shadow. Mm. But before you knew that you'd be redoing all of the ACOTAR books, was there a character while you were reading that you were like, oh man, if I ever got the opportunity, that would be fun to voice?
No, I remember thinking, I mean, what's crazy is that for years, I would get like a message a week, like a DM a week from somebody being like, are you going to do ACOTAR? I hope you do ACOTAR. I wish you did ACOTAR. Like, that was going on for so many years. And then by the time I read them, I was still reading them in the context of needing to know those characters. So I was still reading them from the sense of like, okay, I'm going to have to figure out how to do these 2 worlds at once and all of that. But I remember being like, oh, the first person would be so fun. Like, if I did get the opportunity.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
It's just such a different relationship. And I remember being like, oh, that'd be so fun. And it would be so hard.
Right.
And look at you
but
now.
Yeah. Crazy.
And so you read ACOTAR during Crescent City because I guess you knew about the crossover that was coming.
Yes. And just like, so no one comes at me like, I just had a lot of reading with Throne of Glass and like other books. So I wasn't like, you know, it just took me a minute. You
know? How dare you?
It's still like, some of those books are like 800 pages, you know?
Okay, got it. So Sarah had told you to read ACOTAR. Or you, if you hadn't yet.
Yes.
So in regards to the new recording of ACOTAR, so for the 10-year anniversary and the re-release and all these things, how long have you known this is a plan? Or was this a surprise to you? I guess you said people have DM'd you a lot and said...
Right, yeah. But it was something I never thought it would actually happen. And I never ever mentioned or said anything about those DMs. But I knew for a while, I'm trying to remember exactly when... I only knew for a while because it took so long to set up in terms of schedule and in terms of like they needed them by the end of January of this year for May. And it just took so long to kind of get all those ducks in a row. So there's probably about a year between the like actual offer and that. But what was funny is that it just was an email from my agents that popped up one day. And then I immediately was like, and like texted Sarah being like, oh my God, oh my God. And so it was a surprise and a shock that way. And then we talked about it and all of that. So that was kind of fun. But I knew for a while and it just took a long time to get schedule-wise figured out.
Yeah.
Oh, the other thing I'll say is that we were sort of doing them in secret. And then that Spotify announcement came out when I was in Wings and Ruin. And so it was like totally different how in one sort of day we went from nobody knew it was happening to like my phone was blowing up and all of that stuff. So it was just like that was sort of a crazy thing to get probably about halfway through and then do the whole second half of the books, like with everybody knowing that they're coming was yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. Well, that fandom, that kind of leads into this next question.
Yeah.
So recording ACOTAR, does it feel different? I mean, aside from the first person, third person narration, I wonder if it feels different than you did when you were recording TOG, because when you were recording TOG, it was a brand new series. And obviously you were recording as it was being released. But now with ACOTAR, there is such a set big fandom.
Yeah.
That TOG did have eventually, but you were already so ingrained in the world. So did it feel like a different pressure going into ACOTAR?
Absolutely. Yeah. And what I will say is like the SJM fan base is overall such a loving group of people, I think, compared to other fandoms, or at least that's been largely my experience. But yeah, I definitely felt a lot of pressure. And they're so globally beloved. And not only that, like people have deep relationships with these characters where as soon as it was announced, I was getting DMs from people asking me to do certain things for certain characters, which is an experience I've never had.
Wow.
And so I was like, ooh, I didn't do that, but it's great. But yeah, and then I think I really wasn't aware at all during all of Throne of Glass, I think. I did an event with Sarah at Symphony Space that I think was Kingdom of Ash. And that was the first time I saw like hundreds of people and like all of this stuff. And it sort of dawned on me that it was a big deal. But I did that whole series, I think, without any of that in my head. And I think I was probably much more liberal in my choices with that. And then with ACOTAR, just knowing how beloved they are, it was just conversations and choices like they're so globally adored that if I put an accent on one of the major characters, like that's a big choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think part of the navigating of it was going like, okay, well, I didn't do this, but like if I make so-and-so Australian, everyone, like there are people in Australia that will be like, oh my God, you know, so... It was choices more like that. And also people have such deep relationships that, I mean, specifically with accents, just for the major, like Night Court, our major people, I felt like if I put an accent on them, then I'm going to spend all my time getting insecure about the accent, thinking about how it's coming out. And I will think less about the character and the story and what's happening in the moment. So there were choices like that, that are definitely choices I made because of the fandom, but for the specific purpose of like, then all I'm going to think about is embodying who each of the characters are without putting choices on top of it. Mm. And so that feels like a different approach than Throne of Glass, where one, I was younger as a human and a narrator, and a lot of the way that I thought at certain times, I was like, what haven't I done yet? You know, I was thinking in that like, how could I fill out the world in a brand new way? Which is a good way to think, but it just felt a little different where I remember early on, I like had the creative idea that all the witches could have like Slavic accents, which in hindsight, like, we're all very glad that that choice did not end up getting made. But yeah, so there's more of that in my head. And also the feeling of, how can I say this that will make sense? It's like, I almost want to get out of the way of the book. Like, I want to deliver the book to people, but I don't want to put so much on top of each character that I've made it about me, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. That it felt like that mostly. And just the, you know, it was hard every day because I had a lot more of those thoughts than I normally ever do, of just the pressure and mostly the pressure of wanting to do a good job for the fans and for Sarah. But yeah, that was really different. I also just want to add that, like, one of the positive things about the pressure is that the nice thing about ACOTAR is that there are choices of what people can listen to. So, like, as of, you know, before the graphic audios will come out, like, if you didn't like what I did with Throne of Glass, like, there weren't other versions. So what is nice about this is that the original ones will stay up. And then there's the graphic audio. And so it's sort of like, if I'm not your cup of tea, you're not forced to listen to me read you the book, you know? So that was something that I would use as like a comforting, like, well, they have choices. They don't have to if they don't like it.
They don't have to. Yeah. But will love it.
They have to.
We'll see.
And just to piggyback off that, the Archeron sisters in general are so beloved and deeply important to so many people, but also they have such different voices and different arcs. So how did you approach, I guess, differentiating them also while knowing from the beginning their whole arc?
Yeah, it was really fun. It was also like, I have a sister, and so much of that was just fun to kind of feel like it was familiar. But the main way that I thought of them, each is their individual, like Elaine really begins in like more of that kind of naive or just very sunny kind of place. And then she goes into her, like, after she comes out of the cauldron, she's so numb, and then she becomes a seer. And so there, you know, that arc I know is coming at the beginning, but you almost have to forget that you know that arc is coming, so you're in the moment of what they sound like. But the basic way through that was, they're all sisters, so they're going to sound similar, but I'm a big believer in pitch differentiation. So Feyre is pretty close to my narrating middle ground, and then Elaine, especially at the beginning, I would pitch up a little higher, which I think gives that kind of sweetness. And in the same way that I feel like when she's speaking, I'm sort of seeing through her eyes. So hopefully it's coming out more than just a pitch thing. But then Nesta was in that really kind of guttural lower place. And so thinking of it like a chord where there's the top, the middle, and the bottom, hopefully, is what will keep them clear when you're listening, and you'll be able to tell, hopefully, which sister is speaking when. But that was really fun to play with. And then just looking at, you know, where they are in their individual arcs, and then in relation to each other was really, really fun.
Yeah, definitely. I love that.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Okay, so one of my favorite quotes that I always try to tell myself is, comparison is the thief of joy. And
great quote.
I'm curious how you navigate social media and trolls and focus, yeah, and not let it steal your joy and not let it distract you as you're, you know, recording any of these books.
It's really hard. It's probably the hardest part of all of it for me. And especially, I mean, outside of the kind of troll element, what I love about this job and have loved about it is the off-camera nature of it. I know I'm talking to you like on camera right now, so just, you know, do with this what you will. But it's now so much more of a world of like, let's film the promo for, you know, social media. And I am pretty shy, and that feels really tough, that like it feels like I got to do all of Throne of Glass without any of that kind of stuff.
The fanfare,
or just the kind of like, you know, the video of it, just the I don't know, the kind of self-consciousness that comes with like the comments about what your face looks like as opposed to just your voice, that kind of stuff, which like I don't get a lot of. It's just an insecurity that I think about. But the trolls, it's tough. I have Reddit completely blocked, where I can't get into it even if I tried, which is healthy because I feel like that's the place where people who think I should be shot go.
You know? Oh my gosh.
No, I don't mean it that like horribly. Yeah. But like, it's sort of, no matter what you do, you're never going to please everybody. So there's an element of that. And what I try to think about in the booth is, how would I want to hear the story? How would I want it to be told, to sort of try to get, you know, that stuff. And then with the comparison thing, I've just been really protective of, I haven't heard the graphic audios, the other narrators on the series. And I'm off TikTok. I'm not on any of that. Just Instagram is the only thing I'm on. But anyone that sort of does the like filming of themselves reading it, I also don't look at any of that. So I don't have the other stuff in my head. And I'm still sort of like blissfully ignorant, in a way that makes me feel like then I can retain my own impulses, good or bad. But it's not, you know, me trying to sound like another actor doing something feeling.
Exactly.
Yeah. I completely understand that.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the trolls thing, I'll say, truly this fandom, the stuff I get directly, I've almost never gotten a mean message about any of Sarah's books. I'm on another series that it was my first, very different kind of fandom, but it was my first experience getting like legitimate harassment, threat kind of messages.
Oh my God.
And it sort of was very jarring, and I like reported it, and I told the publisher, and like did what you're supposed to do. And it wasn't a ton, but it was the first time I was getting that kind of stuff. And it made me really grateful that this fandom overall feels like it doesn't operate, you know, in a general sense from that mm-hmm. place, and that people are passionate because they love the characters, as opposed to it being almost like a toxic love, if that makes sense, you know.
Yes. Yeah. 100%.
It's also, you know, once these come out, like we're still in the phase right now where anything I've gotten on these has been mostly messages of like love and excitement, and then when they come out, like the other side will be operating with, you know, not everybody will like the choices I've made or that sort of thing. And I know that that piece of it is also coming. And so it's like, I'll be off the internet and delete everything off my phone for a little bit.
Yes. Just
mute words.
Take a vacay. And
on Instagram.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
But then it's like, I'm also so aware of the scale of it, where like the books are a huge deal and they're globally beloved, but I don't know how like a celebrity handles the level of that kind of stuff. So the scale of it, I always try to remember. And then it's sort of like, you know, if I've seen like a mean comment or something like that, or I like go out to dinner with friends who like don't know anything about this and don't, you know, just try to balance out my life in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's so smart. I love that.
Yeah.
Okay. So are there any songs or like a specific genre of music that you associate with any of the people you voiced in the Mass verse?
Yeah, I'm not normally like this, but when we did Silver Flames, I was listening to Charlie XCX a lot.
Oh, I love that.
So I would listen to like Sympathy is a Knife, I think is a great Nesta song.
Yeah.
And then like Doja Cat's Paint the Town Red, where she's like, yeah, bitch, I said what I said.
What I
like
said.
That feels like it's kind of
Nesta. I love that
one.
Yeah. So I just listened to that when I would commute to the studio. But then like by the time you've like made the tea and you've like gotten into the booth, all the sort of like it'll put me in the world is gone. But exactly. It's just fun.
Yeah. Oh, that's
I
so
love
fun.
That. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to try not to get emotional when I ask you this question, because I just, Aelin is like deeply special to, you know, all of us. And I read them as they were coming out. I read the series 6-7 times in its entirety. And you are the voice of Aelin in my head. Like I've always listened to it. It's a comfort listen. My husband just listened to it because he's in the car with me while we were moving to a new state. And I was like, we're listening to Elizabeth. Put it on. So, you know, and we've heard you say that you feel like you kind of grew up with Aylin. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, you know, what has that meant to you to like grow alongside her?
Yeah, I mean, it's been not only her as a character, but just the sort of larger piece of it. The fact that I can be such a small part of something that is so meaningful to so many people in all of the series, that has just been the greatest joy and sort of makes me feel like I've done something that has affected people in a positive way. Even though I didn't write it, I'm like a piece of it. And so that has felt like it's given real serious meaning to my life in a lovely way. And then with Aylin, it is like this sort of ghost that's kind of with me all the time, in a way that I feel like I get messages from people all the time. I got one today that was, there'll be messages of like, those books got me through really dark times. And every time I get a message, I think like, me too, like those books also got me through dark times. And I still think of them in certain moments today. And I just like, I really love her as a character so much. And I just, you know, I don't have like great articulate words about it, but it's been incredibly meaningful. And you know, not to get so like, one day when I have children and they're like of a certain age to read those books, like there'll be a whole new wave of meaning then.
Yeah.
You know, like I think about those things that like they will exist forever and she will exist forever as a character and just continue to touch people. And that's huge to me. It's gigantic. And yeah.
Oh God.
Fire heart, why do you cry? That's
I know. It's such a
I know.
I was going to say, are there any Aylin quotes that stick with you or quotes that are your favorites?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to be careful to try not to say exactly them because I'm like not, you know, but, you know, yeah. I will not be afraid. Like whenever she says her own name, and I will not be afraid. That's something that comes to me in moments in my life still today.
Yeah.
And then I'm just always going to love in sort of a big gravitas kind of way that once upon a time in a kingdom long since burnt to ash. They're just, it's so good.
There lived
so
a young princess.
Loved the kingdom.
Yeah. Very much.
Very much. Yeah. We pulled our favorite quotes, and Aerifier, that the last line, you know, when she says for the first time, she like claims her name and my name is Aylin Galathinius and I will not be afraid. Mm-hmm. And tying it back to Sam, who I can't talk about without sobbing.
It's just not possible.
Not possible.
Oh gosh.
Okay. So we've talked a lot about like Throne of Glass, but I'm curious, and I don't, maybe you can't say this, but with ACOTAR or CC, was there a favorite moment that you had recording?
I mean, like the whole hike with Nesta, and also the Nesta Cassian scene in Frost and Starlight, I really love when they confront each other and he throws the thing into the river.
The present, yeah.
Yeah. I really loved the action sequence of Asriel rescuing Elaine in Wings and Ruin. Mm. I loved all the wedding stuff. I loved like Rhys's whole introduction. And then like one of the hard parts about recording ACOTAR was Tamlin's arc and having to live, like convince myself and live in the space of like, he's the one in the first book.
Yeah.
Before, you know, realizing that it's Rhys. So, but yeah, I mean, there's so many moments. It would just kind of be, there's nothing that I was like, oh, can't, I have to do that. Like, every moment was just
amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was there a CC moment in Crescent City?
Yeah. The end of the second book was really exciting just because I knew that the world would explode.
It did.
And it did.
And then I loved Bryce and Danica's relationship so much. I was grieving at the time too, at the top of the first book. So that felt really meaningful. And I was like grieving in a sort of reckless party girl kind of fashion. And so that all of that felt very, I loved doing that. And it was really fun having the conversations about like, this is a brand new world.
Yeah.
That was really exciting. And then in Flame and Shadow, the crossover was really exciting. Every book, they're such a joy to do. I really look forward to them. But yeah.
I remember in particular, your narration in my head of the moment where Lydia says, they're my sons. Mm. You just did that so beautifully of like building that up. And then that line ending the chapter, it was just, it's so good.
Oh, thanks. I mean, I really, it's one of the, I'm like physically exhausted at the end of every book because I really do try to put everything into it where most of the time, especially for ACOTAR, I was in a studio where you couldn't stand. So it's like you're sitting the whole time and I like to stand and go back and forth in studios where you can. But I really am like trying to put as much physicality as I can into it, because then my brain doesn't have to work as hard to think about creating a certain sound. I'm just sort of, if somebody's running and they're moving, like I'm doing all of that.
Yeah, yeah.
So nice that no one can see me. And but yeah, they're all of that kind of stuff. Like I leave at the end of these books, like I feel like I left it all there. So I'm glad that like I remember the section that you were talking about, like building up to that and then feeling very like, huh.
Yeah.
For me, it's the Take It Off in Throne of Glass.
Yeah.
Oh.
But specifically in A Crescent City, book one, the lighted up moment at the end is
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I don't know why, but that moment in that book, I connected with it. Two women who are there for each other and not a man, but best friends, and this lighted up and hearing you say it and like go, I can hear it in my head, the build up to her, hearing Danica's voice and then running to her. It's visceral. So I just.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
That makes me, I remember when we were doing some of that, I kept peeking the microphone because I'd be too loud. And so we'd have to stop and I'd have to, like, those would be a moment where I didn't like mess up and we'd stop, but the engineer would stop me and be like, it's too hot. Like, you've got to bring it down a little bit, because I would get into it. And I'd just be like actually yelling and there was a microphone. Like, right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I love that. And it was built, the rhythm of that was built so beautifully too. That was same with the take it off, all of that, like gives me, yeah.
Oh, the Take It Off. Your delivery of that is really, it's so good. It's beautiful. And also awful, everything. It's all the feelings we should be feeling in that moment.
Lorcan's POV, then it leads POV.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in that scene.
A lot going on.
Okay, so to wrap it up, we want to ask you your thoughts on this very hot topic in the Throne of Glass fandom about reading order. Do you have a strong, and people really, this is a big
people
deal.
People feel very strongly.
They do. Do you have strong feelings about where Assassin's Blade is placed in the reading order?
I don't. I really don't have strong feelings. And like, I'm happy other people do, but... I think you should start with Throne of Glass. That's my only sort of opinion, is I don't think, even though it is the prequel, I think Throne of Glass, the beginning of it, sets up the story in the way that you should receive the opening of the story. In my opinion, God, people are going to come for me now.
That's also our opinion. So
the world building is in Throne of Glass.
Yeah. But then I think it's sort of like, you know, whenever you want to read it. I mean, definitely before Kingdom of Ash, you'll need those characters. But I think Air of Fire maybe is like around before you get there. And I think I recorded it third. But yeah, I think I don't have a strong opinion. But I love that people do.
I love that. Yeah. They feel strongly, let me tell you.
They sure yeah. do. What are your thoughts on the tandem read idea of doing those back and forth?
Sure. Whatever. If you read them, great. 5 stars.
Yeah.
You know, like,
exactly. Oh my gosh. Can you imagine if someone somehow edited them together as a tandem listen?
Oh my gosh.
That was crazy. Someone should float that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be insane.
I love that people are so passionate about it, that they put the time and energy into like, do this stuff and then switch and then that. Like, that is so cool.
Yeah.
It is.
It is. Yeah. It is. Okay. I think that wraps it up.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Elizabeth, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. This was so lovely. And thank you for fitting it in like around my nuts schedule at the moment. I appreciate that so much. So yeah, this was so fun.
We were so thrilled to have you. And we're so excited to hear the new ACOTAR narrations on May 30th. We are pre-ordered. We're ready to go.
Oh, the two things I could say about that, because I've been getting a lot of DMs since they pushed it back.
Yes, please.
I don't know why. I have no idea why it's been. And then the other thing is I've been getting DMs because the run times are a little shorter and people are like, is it not the full book? And it's totally the full, like every book is the full book. I think I just maybe talked a little faster, or that I speed up for action sequences or something, but like it's the full books, even though the run times are a little different. So.
You're not like skipping a chapter.
No, I mean, it's not like the cut version.
Exactly. I just made some edits casually. Like me, I just decided to cut.
But we're so excited to go hear them.
Yay! Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth. This was so wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, you're both so lovely. So lovely to meet you.
You too.
And, yeah.
Well, friends, that wraps up another episode of Flights of Fantasy Podcast. Don't forget to join our book club community on Instagram and TikTok at Flights of Fantasy Podcast, where you can share your thoughts, theories, and favorite moments with us and fellow listeners. We'd love to hear from you. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. Your support helps us spread the magic of romanticism to even more book lovers. Until next time, keep dreaming, keep reading, and remember, every good story deserves to take flight.